Welcome to Revenue Rehab, your one-stop destination for collective solutions to the biggest challenges faced by marketing leaders today. Now head on over to the couch, make yourself comfortable, and get ready to change the way you approach revenue. Leading your recovery is modern marketer, author, speaker, and chief operating officer at Tegrita, Brandi Starr.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Revenue Rehab. I am your host, Brandi Starr, and we have a truly amazing episode for you today. I am joined by Matt Hines. Matt is the founder and president of Hines Marketing and has more than 15 years of marketing, business development, and sales experience from a variety of organizations, vertical industries, and company sizes. His career has focused on delivering measurable results for his employers and clients in the way of greater sales, revenue growth, product success, and customer loyalty. And Matt is no stranger to Revenue Rehab. He joined me way back when for episode 14, where we talked about the amazing community that he runs, CMO Coffee Talk. Matt, welcome back to Revenue Rehab. Your session begins now.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I am legit deeply honored to be here for episode 100, and congratulations on episode 100 as well. I mean, just it's not a lot of podcasts get to this point, I think, because some people just get bored with it or give up on it, but you've kept it fresh and interesting and highly relevant throughout. So congrats on all the success.
Thank you. Yeah, I am excited. I know when we started, they told us that a lot of podcasts don't make it to episode 11.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah. And so, you know, when we hit 12, I was like, okay, team, we made it. But yeah, episode 100, it's crazy. It kind of snuck up on me because it really feels like, you know, I just interviewed MK for episode one, like yesterday, but so much has changed. But before we dive into our topic, you know, I like to break the ice with a little woo-saw moment called buzzword banishment. So what buzzword would you like to get rid of forever?
I there's a category of buzzwords I describe as what I'm selling led growth. Right. And there's all these different, like, and it's like we all live in glass houses. Everyone's trying to do their best, but it just seems like everyone's trying to say, well, you can use this to lead growth, or you can use this to lead growth, or this tactic, or this channel. And way too often it's the company selling you a solution for that is coming up with that. And so, I think it's life is life, and business and B2B is never that simple. So it's gotten a little out of control. You know, a lot of those strategies work, but you got to put them in context and sort of think about the body of work that needs to happen to create predictable results in B2B. So that's my buzzword, is the what I'm selling led growth of the day.
I am all in. I know I joked with someone. I said, when taco led growth becomes a thing, like, call me, because I am all in on that strategy. I don't know how it'll help with revenue, but either way, I'd love to have fun trying.
So I was having dinner with a bunch of CMOs a couple weeks ago, and we got on this topic, and someone said, as soon as someone says, I've created revenue-led growth or sales-led growth, I'm like, okay, now what? That actually I can get behind, because that does drive growth. But yes, at this point, we're so far into our inside baseball weeds, I don't know what we're doing anymore.
Well, I love it. So jumping into our topic, as you mentioned, this is the 100th episode of Revenue Rehab. And so my team and I were brainstorming around what did we want to do for episode 100, because it's such a big deal. And they challenged me to not just come up with a great business problem to solve for this episode, but to pick a guest that I admired, like someone who, you know, we aspire to be successful in this podcast. So, you know, kind of going with that inspiration. And, you know, when they said that, you were the first person that jumped into my mind, because I have been like a backseat fangirl for, you know, probably a decade now. I think when I first met you, I was still at my last company. And I've been here for 9 years. So it really has been like a decade. And, you know, I really admire what you've done, not only through Hines Marketing, but also just the really genuine reputation that you've built for yourself. And so, you know, I'm excited to talk to you about, you know, Heinz on growth. So Heinz led growth. We're going to throw that one in there. And just, you know, to hear some of your lessons, you know, from your business, because you are a brand and you also spend your life helping to build and grow other brands. And so, you know, there's lots of lessons, things that I've seen you do that I've sent to my team and I'm like, oh, take a look at this. You know, and so like you're an inspiration to them as well. So they were like, oh yeah, I know who that is. So, yeah. So really excited to dig in here.
Awesome. Where do you want to start?
Well, I'd like to start with setting an intention. Like you know, it always gives focus and purpose. And so in sharing your story and knowing that the audience is primarily, you know, CMOs, VPs of marketing, what would you like them to take away from hearing about your experience and success?
Well, there's so many things that come to mind. I think first is, you know, just, you know, we all live in glass houses and I think we're always learning. And I think if, you know, I fundamentally believe if you don't look back at sort of your earlier stages of your career in life, and if you don't cringe a little bit, you're probably not improving and probably not sort of learning enough and becoming a better, not just better at what you do, but a better human, a better contributor to, you know, society and the people around you. I think, you know, as I've gotten older, I definitely leaned more into just thinking about what's the real impact I want to have on the people that matter around me. You know, I think someone told me once that success in a variety of different ways you define that is a platform for doing things that matter. And I was in an entrepreneur. So I mean, I've been in this entrepreneur group for about 10 years. And a couple of years ago, we went through this exercise around sort of your discovering your living legacy and defining what it means for you, not to sort of wait until the end and see what people say about you, but to say like, what do you want your legacy to be? What impact do you want to have, whether it's the world or your family or however you define that? And how do you start living that now? How do you start inspiring that? Or how do you start prioritizing things in your life now? And that was a big deal for me, thinking about where I want to spend my time, where I want my business to go, what I want our business to enable. You know, we, around that same time, we were sort of rethinking sort of who we wanted to be as a business. And the stated purpose we have as our business still today is to positively impact careers and lives by enabling work that matters. And that whole statement to me is important. And I can go deep into sort of what I mean by work that matters. But the first part is like positively impact careers and lives for our employees, for our clients, for any B2B marketer that we can influence. And then lastly, the communities in need around us. Those are four groups that we think about a lot. And, you know, in good times and bad, that is a purpose that helps us decide what we want to do. It helps us prioritize people over profits in some cases when times get tough. You know, I'm lucky that I don't have investors. I'm not a public company. I'm a sole owner. So we can do things that, like, you know, a investor-backed company or a public company might not do, because I think it serves our purpose. You know, look, that's not the right answer for everybody, but I'm very, very grateful that even as a small company, we can have an impact on a few people by being true to that purpose.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's definitely one of the things I admire about you. And it is like the same for me. I can remember early in my career, you know, some conference or something where it was like a motivational speaker, and they did this visualization exercise where they had, you know, they went a little morbid and they had you visualize your funeral. And, you know, not so much like, what does it look like or what are you wearing, but more so like, what are people getting up and talking about? What do you want them to be talking about you? And are you living your life now in a way that leads to that? And that, you know, and ironically, shortly thereafter, I ended up at the funeral for, you know, my husband at the time's grandmother. And like the mayor came and like, whoa, she was from this really small town in Georgia.
Yeah.
But everybody, I mean, there were people that came through and said, you know, her feeding them was the only meal that they were getting at the time they were growing up. Several guys talked about how if it weren't for her, you know, like keeping them off the streets, they'd probably be in jail or dead, like all these things. And, you know, I was like, not that I wanted that same impact, but that level of impact on people's lives was really what I wanted for myself. And yeah, I have held on to that same notion throughout my entire career. And there have been times, like even now, you know, Tegrid is a small company. When I came here 9 years ago, I had an opportunity that was much more lucrative financially. Mm-hmm. But I chose this because very yeah, similarly, it is, you know, people and purpose over profits. It very much looks to have an impact in the community, be a great place to work. And those sort of things are the things that allow you to leave a legacy and yeah, make a little money, even though it's not, you know, it may not be the same as, you know, Fortune 100 right, kind of company money.
Well, it's all trade-off, you know. I think, you know, pre-pandemic, you know, in service to my family and business, I was doing a lot of speaking. I was doing a ton of travel. I think I did over 100,000 miles just domestically in 2019. And I justified every second of it saying, like, I'm helping our business, I'm helping my family, I'm providing for my family. And then I think of that fall of that year, I was like 8 straight weeks I was traveling. And you know, the pandemic was a really big control delete for me. It was a really big reset on just the value that the satisfaction I felt being home, the value I felt being present. And you know, here, you know, 4 years later or whatever, I'm still traveling way less. And to be honest, like it means that I'm making less. It means that some of those opportunities that come from either a paid speaking gig somewhere or being at a conference and getting some biz dev out of that, I know that I'm missing some of that, but I'm here. Like literally when we finish recording this, you know, my son's wrestling meet is this afternoon. It's late. He's a seventh grader and he's in wrestling. And last week, I had a full day set up. It was last Thursday and I wasn't traveling. I was here, but I had a full day of meetings. And my daughter had a little medical issue in the morning and my son's had an away meet. And like last minute, they're like, we need people that can drive. So I had to cancel a couple prospect meetings. I had to cancel a podcast recording and just say, I'm really sorry, but here's what's going on. Well, my daughter needed me that morning. And I'm grateful that I have a job that even gives me the opportunity to like make that decision. Yeah. And by going and being a chaperone for my son's away meet, I got to see what it turned out to be his first win and his first pin as a middle school wrestler. Oh, and I was there. Amazing. And so like the meetings I had to reschedule, like were a non-issue, like no one cares.
Right.
But the fact that I got that moment with Nick, the fact that I was there and was able to prioritize that, there's no amount of money in this stage in my life that can replace that. And so I think that trade-off, I don't think earlier Matt would have made. I think like even pre-pandemic Matt would have said, Claire, you got to figure it out. I got to work. You know, I would have been afraid to reschedule something for work instead of prioritizing my child. Like, and if you put it in that way, you're like, that sounds dumb. Well, that's where my brain went. And I could justify it by saying, you got to figure it out because I have to take this meeting because if this turns into business, it's going to help us keep paying the bills and we'll get to have the life that we have. But that's not like the life that we have isn't about the money. It's about being there for her. It's about seeing that smile on my son's face when that hard work over the last year and a half paid off and he got his first win. So I don't know. I'm going off on a tangent, but I just think, look, the older I get and the more mistakes I make, the more I think about what really matters. Not only the people around me that I can impact, but the things that matter to me and that will have like, no one's going to care about, you know, those two meetings last week, but being there for my son, that is a memory that he and I, and we will have forever.
Yeah.
And it's very important.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you hit on a really key point. Not everyone, you know, is a business owner or has the desire, but even in making choices in your career and what, mm-hmm, sorts of environments that you want to work in, like there is a good lesson to be taken away from that. Because I can think of times in my career or people that I know now who are at companies who really would have been frowned upon to cancel meetings, especially prospect meetings. Like, heaven forbid you do something to, you know, hinder revenue, to be there for family. And there's so many people that are faced with those dilemmas, you know, every day, that it is, you know, you do get to a stage where you have to, you know, you, or not have to, but you choose to choose differently.
I think you get to. I think you get, I mean, I consider it a high privilege to be able to do that, to make those trade-offs. And, you know, I think the same thing, it's not just me as the owner and founder. It's like, if someone on the team has something that an emergency comes up, go take care of your people, go do what you need to do. You know, we do Friday hours. So like half the team, we sort of rotate on Fridays, half the team takes off at noon, the other half the following noon and sort of like that. And we've got people kind of spread out geographically now. We've got an employee in Eastern Washington who is doing some, you know, charity work with her mom on her Fridays, and they changed the schedule so that she could no longer use those Fridays. And so we're like, that's a slam dunk. We'll change where your Fridays hour so you can still go do that stuff, right? If your kid has a thing going on at school, if you need to, we will work around that, right? I mean, it's, I mean, what we do is important, but there aren't that many sales pipeline emergencies in the middle of the day, right? So I think if you prioritize your people, those are the moments, right? Like, you, on a sunny day when it's really easy, like your values, your purpose is easy to follow. When things get hard, when that's when the decisions you make and your commitment to your purpose really stands out. I mean, I'm grateful that we've got people that have been working for us for like you know, my COO is still here 15 years later. We've got a business and marketing operations analyst that's been with us for 10 plus years. I mean, I'm just very grateful that not only we've got people that we have earned the right to continue to work with, but they've leaned in with us to help create the impact we've been able to have on the world through our purpose as well.
Yeah. And so that leads me to my next topic, which really is around leadership. Because, you know, when you get to a senior level, you know, at any facet of your career, like, leadership becomes just as important of a responsibility as being good at the actual craft. Right. And, you know, I know that you put a lot of thought into how you lead your team, the, you know, culture that you set, and those sorts of things. And so for someone who struggles in that area, because I know, you know, again, talking to a lot of leaders, they do feel that tug and pull of, I got to get all the things done, but then I also have these people. And so what advice do you give to other leaders in, you know, being able to focus on that and prioritize those efforts and thoughts? Because it does take mental space to even, you know, really not just get in the go.
It's a really great question. First, I would just say that if you are feeling that struggle, if you're feeling that tension, you are already a great leader, because that means you are prioritizing, your brain is already prioritizing supporting the people on your team. If you didn't feel that tension, it would mean you're like, just, well, they are a cog, they are a means unto an end, and we're focused on the result, and they just got to figure out how to get there, right? And like, there are times when you just got to, like, you got to focus and get things done. But until robots sell to robots, which, I don't know, might be around the corner someday, like, but, the people matter. The people are everything. So you have to find that balance. Now, does that mean, like, you can just, like, oh, you know, feel free to work whenever you want to work? No, we got things we got to do. We have responsibilities. But those responsibilities don't begin and end at work. And I think when you treat your people with respect, when you respect what they have going on in their lives, people that have shared values with you will lean in on that. Like, we have a fit test that we put in, that we've used to evaluate new hires, and we sort of use to sort of make sure that we've got the right people on the team as well. And I call it GWC plus values. GWC stands for gets it, wants it, can do it. So in any given role, I want someone that gets to their job, wants the job, and can do the job, right? And then we have five core values, and we will evaluate employees and prospective employees on those five values. And the worst you can do is if I look at that value and say, do they adhere to this value? The worst that you can do is have two neutrals. So passing grade is two neutrals and three positives on our five values, right? And so we spend a lot of time with prospective employees. We want to understand, can you do the work? But we really want to understand, are you someone that's going to fit in our culture? Are you someone that is going to enhance our culture, but match our values? What we do, I mean, look, we've got like a pretty deep, what I think is a pretty sophisticated methodology for what I do, but it's not rocket science. We have a whole onboarding training system. We've got templates. We can teach you how to do this. I cannot teach you to care about our values in the way that the rest of our employees do. So the second answer, first answer to your question is just like, if you feel that struggle, you're already on the right path. Second is, if you commit to a purpose and a set of values for your organization, and if you truly activate those in the business, if you hire for them, if you reward for them, if you look at people that are struggling and sort of do that test again and say, where is there an opportunity for coaching? Can we identify one of these areas that maybe someone's gotten a little lax on, or something's going on in their life, that things are a little struggle? If they were a values fit before, they probably still are. And so where can we coach and make sure we're bringing people with us? I think there's an opportunity. Like, when you have those values and you activate them and make them part of your culture, it's not just you as a leader pulling everyone through. You have an entire organization that is aligned with and believes and protects that culture and those values.
Yeah, we made a similar shift about 4 years ago. Doesn't have a name for it. I feel like I need an acronym now. but it is very similar in, you know, testing for, are you naturally, you know, do you naturally fit into this? Is this the kind of thing that, you know, you can do in your sleep? And how do you align to our core values? And since we've made that shift, I mean, it's harder to hire because it, you know, sometimes you find people with all the skills, but not the fit, but you find that out more upfront. And what we've seen is the longevity, just like you're saying, people who have been there, you know, forever. It's like when you really put people in roles that they are a natural fit for in a culture that really aligns to who they are, they don't want to go anywhere. Yeah. And they will go hard for your organization, you know, especially during those tough times when you do need people to double down and, you know, make things happen, because they've got that balance.
Well, I think if you've got people that have their values fits, and if you subscribe to sort of the people on the bus kind of philosophy of like bringing on the right type of people as you grow and as you have different needs, people can take different seats. Like, we think of that internally as tours of duty, right? Like, you may have a particular role and this may be your job description. You may be like, hey, listen, you know, over the course of the next 3 months, like, we have some extra things we need to get done. We would love you to play a role this quarter on getting this, this, or this done. And like, it's not your permanent new job, but if you match our values and you're bought in on the purpose and what we're working towards, like, taking on a new challenge, doing that in a place where there's empathy and respect and trust that you'll figure it out and can do it. And if you can't, you're going to ask questions and we're going to work on it together. Right. I believe in individual accountability for roles, but I agree in group accountability. If people are stuck and things are falling behind, we as a team support that person and help them get back on track. And it makes those tours of duty easier for people to accept and then thrive in. And sometimes they stay with that. Like, I've had our head of biz ops right now, we hired her as a Marketo expert. And, you know, just the evolution of her career, but frankly, her life as well. You know, she's now crushing it, just running the back office for us. And, you know, she's been incredible. And it's been really, really gratifying, not only seeing her growth in that role, but also seeing and knowing how she's been able to lean in with her family, given that role and the flexibility it's given her as well. And that's, you know, positively impacting careers and lives, man. That's right at the core of our purpose.
I love it, love it. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit and talk a little more business.
Yeah.
So as a business owner, I know you have to balance, growing your own brand and supporting your clients. And I think that time management and knowing where your particular efforts are needed most versus where you delegate things to your team are things that people consistently struggle with. And so I'd love to hear how you balance, you know, essentially growing multiple brands at once and figuring out where you are needed most.
It's a good question. And I think, you know, the answers continue to evolve a little bit on that, depending on what stage we are at the business. I don't really care about my personal brand, to be honest. Like 15 and a half years ago, I started this business with a laptop and a bus pass, and I had zero budget. But, you know, I have a journalism degree. And so that didn't, you know, journalism doesn't just teach you to write, it teaches you to tell stories. And I think that has been a really important asset and strength over time. So I started a blog, I started a newsletter, and I just, like, honestly, it's 15 and a half years later, it's still just like, how do I respond to what I see? Like, how do I think about and sort of try to aggregate something semi-intelligent based on what I'm seeing and hearing in the industry? And I think about that in a couple ways. One, if that's a distillation of what I'm seeing and hearing, and that helps other people, if that helps our clients, if it helps clarify something for our team in an engagement they have, if it helps someone in the industry, then that follows our purpose. I think it also provides credibility in the market that, like, hey, these guys, they're not just saying what they can sell. Like, they're walking the walk. They seem to have intelligent things to say. And look, I mean, the fact that, you know, I've been able to build a following based on some of that is great. And certainly, you know, I think that has helped us subsidize some of our growth expenses. Like, we don't have a sales team. Like, it's myself and our COO that basically do the selling for our company. Now, as we grow, like, that'll probably change. We may need someone to come in and help us with that, but I'm super grateful that we've been able to build the business of the size we're at today. And we have no biz dev team. We have no sales team. And certainly having a brand and certainly having followers and certainly having people that want to hear what I have to say or read or write or whatever is like, that's fantastic. But it's always in service to the audience. I see a lot of sort of influencers and creators. They seem to be mostly talking about themselves and writing for an algorithm to give them more clicks. And look, I'm not here to judge anybody, but I don't know that that's in service to anything but their own metrics, I guess. And I realize that if I get more reach, then maybe if I have something interesting to say, maybe that influences more people and I can make a case. So that ties to your purpose. But I'm like, I don't need the most. I don't write and create content to sort of get the most clicks or likes. I just want it to be something that someone might be able to say that helps me make sense of something. Or, as you know, is being part of the CMO Coffee Talk community, you know, we get into topics that kind of get cathartic sometimes and get deep. And if someone says, I feel seen. I'll never forget the session we did on imposter syndrome. And we had someone come in that studied it and written about it and talked about it. And someone called me afterward and said, I legit thought I was one of the only people in my network, in my life, that had imposter syndrome. And to hear that, like, amongst 300 CMOs on the call, like 94% said they had imposter syndrome. And I think the other 6% were probably multitasking and didn't hear the question. It's like, we all have it. And so, like, just whether you learn something or whether you feel seen or whether it just helps you get through your day or get you through that board meeting, I know I'm riffing and ranting a little bit here, but I think, again, I think the service of the content you create to your audience, right, however you define that audience, that is the end goal. If a side benefit of that is you build a brand that benefits you in some way, great, but you will maintain and keep and grow that brand by staying true to the audience that you started to serve in the first place.
Yeah, that's a really good point in just, you know, focusing on what it is that you're trying to do and the rest just kind of happens, you know, and that, of course, that's oversimplifying it. But, you know, at the end of the day, it is not focusing on that, you know, it's being conscious of personal brand, but not necessarily focused on it.
Yeah. I will say, though, that I think, you know, we are entering a world when some of those personal brands are going to be more important, right? As AI has the ability to create content that is intelligent, that is insightful, that sort of does some of that distillation. Until robots sell to robots, and again, we might get there someday, I think people still want to hear from other people. So, you know, listening to what someone has to say and appreciating not only the relevance that has, but also the style of how they created, I think that is a very human delivery. mechanism, and I think that I think humans will continue to be attracted to other humans that can deliver that in a compelling way.
Okay. And I want to shift and really talk about growth, because I know, you know, helping organizations grow their revenue is the, you know, at the core of what you're doing. And from listening to some of your conversations with Brett and reading things that, you know, you post online, I see you've got, you know, good perspective and insight on what is working right now. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the biggest struggles, and you see this come up a lot in Coffee Talk, is people are trying to figure out, like, where do they need to focus their attention? Because there's so many things that are the hot thing for the moment, and then they're, you know, kind of gone. And so what are you seeing that is really working for organizations in being able to accelerate pipeline, increase deal size, velocity, all of the things?
So I love this question, because I've been thinking a lot about this lately. You know, and sort of, you know, our focus as a business is to help, you know, companies build more predictable pipeline. And so it's things like, you know, who are you selling to? Who are the people? What does the buying committee look like? How are you activating those engagements across sales and marketing? Like, all important stuff, but you have to put that in context. And what I'm finding is that despite many really great CMOs like prioritizing those efforts, they still fight with the C-suite and fight with the board about priorities. They fight about metrics. They fight about who gets credit for what. Like, why aren't we doing this initiative instead of this? Why aren't we getting pipeline immediately from these investments we make? So we have to pull back, all the way back, honestly, to corporate strategy, right? And let's not dwell on this a lot, but like, where are you as a business? Like, are you early stage? Are you in product market fit mode? Where are your funding sources, and what do they need? What are the shareholder or stakeholder objectives? You know, if you're early stage and doing product market fit, then maybe your growth at all costs just to prove that you've got something so you can get the next round. If you're private equity owned, like, profitability, EBITDA really matters. So again, corporate strategy combined with your market opportunity, like, how mature is your industry? What's the mindset of your customers? What kind of competitive set do you have? So corporate strategy combined with market opportunity gives you a go-to-market strategy that can say, we're willing to spend everything possible to acquire companies, or we want to be as profitable and tight as possible, or we need to be all about net new sales, or we need to actually mix in some retention strategies around that as well. Or, you know what, we need to focus everything we have on a media pipeline versus we're going to start to invest in owned land. We're starting to invest in longer term brand and recognition strategies that are going to subsidize our demand over time. How you prioritize those different efforts and how you get aligned on that as an organization, the C-suite, the CEO, the board, it goes back to that corporate strategy and those other ingredients to decide what goes into that. Because if we just sit here and say, like, oh, we should start a community, right? Or, you know what, we should start a podcast, or how come we're not advertising here? How come we're not winning the search wars, or whatever it is? Legit questions, but without context of why, we're just going to fight over a variety of well-meaning priorities. So I think it's the entire organization's responsibility to root what you're doing in those fundamentals, not revisit those like every week. That should be at best like an annual revisit, right? But if you have that initial conversation, if you root what you're doing in that, when you're doing trade-offs, just like if we've got different parties, you can say, what does our purpose say about this? What does our long-term objectives as a business say about what we should prioritize? We should be having the same conversation about our marketing and sales investments. And it's not, again, it's not rocket science. And in some cases you may be like, you know what? There's fundamental questions we've not ever answered. You know, like, how mature is our market? If we think we need to just focus on net new, then maybe that does mean we're not going to create a community, or we're not going to invest in 100 episodes of a podcast, because that's not an immediate pipeline builder, right? It takes a while to build that. I mean, the community of 4 years of CMO Coffee Talk, I can absolutely look back and see what kind of business it's generated. But if you treat it like a pipeline, you're going to ruin it from the beginning.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think it's really important to make sure that those corporate fundamentals are in place, understood, and are agreed upon by all the leaders in your organization. That's the solid ground on which you build your go-to-market strategy and can stick with it and see real long-term success.
Yeah, and I agree completely. I know I always cringe when people are like, oh, well, what are your other clients doing? Like, maybe that'll work for us. And yep. While there are, of course, some lessons that can be learned, I agree. It's not just, you know, it's not like a recipe where it's like, oh, yeah, one cup of flour, two cups of sugar. Everybody's going to, you know, get a great cake. It's, you know, it really is different. And you hit on something that I hear come up a lot, and that is struggles for people that are in mature markets. You know, a lot of times mm-hmm. when you're trying to create a category, or, you know, you're one of few and you're leading, like some of the efforts and where to focus your attention are a little more obvious. But when you're in a more mature market, you know, you've got, everybody's kind of almost on the same playing field. Like, what advice do you give there in being able to, you know, stay ahead, have that predictable pipeline, continue to grow when you are in a mature space?
It's a variation on the theme that I think works in almost every stage of the business, is just be as close to your customers as you can. Because if you're looking at what the industry overall is doing, if you look at what your competitors are doing and saying to the market, that is all built on evidence from the past, right? So that what your competitors are positioning themselves at, the features they are creating, that's based on what they have perceived, rightly or wrongly, that your market needed weeks, months, years ago. What your customers are saying today in real time, like, that can help you predict the future. That can help you understand what their real-time challenges are. And if you start to hear some trends in those conversations, you have a better sense of where they're going. Now, this takes some confidence and fortitude, because what you might be hearing from your customers and where they are headed might be different than what they have said before, and different than what the market and your industry has always done or treats as a status quo, and may be different than what your competitors are still executing on. One of the biggest mistakes I see from big companies is they take their lead not from customers, but from competitors. What are they doing? Let's do that. What features do they launch? We should launch that too. They may have no idea what they're doing, and they are certainly making those decisions based on inherently old data. So the better you can be making decisions based on real-time data, real-time insights. One of the most important investments mature companies can make is a deep and meaningful activated voice of the customer program that doesn't just capture insights. It distills those insights into trends. It translates those trends into priorities, and it has accountability for what you are doing to activate and deliver on those priorities. That is an ongoing process that I think too often big companies start to get to a point where they stop listening. They think they know best. The machine starts doing what the machine wants to do. You respond to noise, which is board members and others saying, look what the competitors are doing. And that's when you lose your edge, because the companies that are coming up behind you, those upstarts, they're like, why are they getting market share? Because they're listening to customers today and they know what they need and they're responding in kind.
Yeah, I mean, that is so true. And I think so many topics come back to voice of customer. And, you know, when you talk about product market fit, when you talk about messaging, you know, what's your communication strategy? Like, mm-hmm. everything does come back to exactly what you said, in how close can you stay to the customer?
That's right.
In order to really, you know, absorb and understand, like, what are their needs? Because mm-hmm. yeah, there are, especially product-based companies, but I've seen it in service as well, where it is very me too. You know, it's like, what are they doing? Oh yeah, we do that too. Us too. Yeah. Like, and you know, that's not the way to go. Cause you're right. By the time they have it out, if you're trying to just get started with it, you're already behind.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a slippery slope. I mean, you know, it's a very dangerous thing if in your company you hear someone say, oh, I know what our customers are doing. I know what they're thinking. And if it's not based on actual direct evidence, if it's not based on recently gathered evidence and reinforcement of messages, whew, that's a slippery slope. And that's a dangerous place to be.
Yeah. And so my last question really is in the word predictive, where, you know, you guys really focus a lot on being able to have that predictive revenue. And I know for so many companies, like, it's seen as only an aspiration to really, you know, be able to say, here's what's coming and when, to any definitive degree. Sure. What do you think is, you know, beyond the things that you've already said, what is that catalyst for businesses being able to get to that point where they can, you know, with some certainty, really be able to predict how they're going to be able to influence revenue?
So a couple key things that are, you know, I think pretty, you know, simple to say, but harder to execute sometimes. One is to do attribution, think of attribution in the right way. Like a lot of companies do attribution and it's really focused on the past. You know, who gets credit for what? Did my department do the right thing? You know, where, you know, did sales do it? Did marketing do it? If attribution is focused on the past, like you're doing it wrong because you can't change the past. Attribution is about the future. What worked? I don't care how it worked. I just want to create, I want to recreate those steps to have a higher likelihood that I'm going to get the results again.
Yeah. Right?
And this is a team sport we're working here, right? There is no marketing did it, sales did it, especially in your B2B, especially in a complex sales environment. Figure out what worked, figure out what sequence worked, and build a system and a playbook to reliably, repeatedly create that result again. And the playbook will change over time. The people involved in the buying process will change. What they care about will evolve over time. So again, listening to the customer, listening to your industry, evolving that process and playbook over time can increase that level of predictability. There's a point of diminishing returns on that effort though, because you will never get to 100% predictability. Like it's the same thing as saying like, I think we continue as an industry to look for that perfect report that is going to answer every question. And I got a buddy who's a financial planner. And he says, like everyone wants to have 100% confidence in that, like, I'm going to be able to retire. I'm going to have enough money. Here's the number I need, right? And look, you can make a spreadsheet say anything. But his general philosophy is, I think you want to be generally right versus precisely wrong.
Yeah.
There's a way to orchestrate the right things that are repeatable to create more predictable outcomes, knowing that you will not 100% be right, but I would rather 80, 90% be right than 40, 50% right, or in most cases have no idea. Right? Yeah. Like let's say you have a great Q1, like you hit your number, you're off to a great start for the year. What's your level of confidence you're going to have a great Q2? What do you know today? What are you doing today that materially dramatically increases the likelihood that you're going to have the same results? Do you know what are the things that led to your Q1 success, and can you repeat those again? Most companies can't answer that question. And so again, I don't care who gets credit in the past. What really matters is, can I repeat that result? Can I learn from that to have a higher likelihood, never 100%, but a higher likelihood of repeating that result again? It requires, as you know, like a culture change in many organizations to treat this as a team project and to sort of put some of those egos aside and say, we are not going to win one department versus another. We are going to win as a group.
Yeah, that holistic approach to everything. And, you know, one of the things you hit on that I think is so important that people don't think about is there's a data component to being predictable. And you've got to make sure that you are tracking and collecting the right things in order to be able to answer those questions. And, you know, I hear people talk about how horrible their data is, but it's like nobody wants to prioritize getting it right. And it's like there's all these things that you are not going to be able to effectively do and influence if we don't have the information to actually inform those decisions.
Yeah. And I sometimes I'll see people not prioritize the data because they're still looking for sort of the perfect solution to that data. And I just don't think that ever is going to exist. But if you lean into the data you have, if you can correlate certain trends to behavior, if you can create a more generally predictable outcome through what you see and then continue to refine that over time, so much more valuable than just trying to make a spreadsheet say anything. So much more valuable than trying to chase that perfect report that in and of itself is in many cases a vanity project. And just say like, here's what we know. Here's what we don't know. Here's what we might never know. But we can still improve predictable results over time by listening to what the market says, listening to what happened, and using that to predict the future as opposed to litigate the past.
Awesome. Well, I will end with one really broad question. So you can take it wherever you'd like. But for our listeners, what is your one piece of advice? You can go professional, personal, any direction, totally open to you. But what is that one piece of key advice from Matt Hines?
I'm going to quote Eric Schmidt. Former CEO chairman of Google. I remember there was years ago he was on stage at Dreamforce with Mark Benioff, and at one point in telling a story, he said, "Life is short. Work with people you enjoy." We spend so much time at work. You know, work is a means unto an end. I am grateful that I love the work that I do. I love the people I work with, and I'm grateful that I'm privileged enough to be able to choose to work with clients that I think align with our values. And if you're going to have, and things are going to go wrong. Things aren't always going to go well. You're going to have dark days. You're going to have trying days. The people you work with matter every day, and especially those days. And life's too short to work with people that just that you don't enjoy. So I think that's been a big one for me.
I love that. And that can be, you know, applied in so many different ways, you know, from your actual career to other places where you spend your time, you know, whether it's volunteering or whatever. It makes all the difference when you enjoy the people, because there's going to be ups and downs in everything. And when you're down and you're down with people that you actually care about, it's a much better experience than, you know, being down and also hating those around you.
100%. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Matt, I have so enjoyed this conversation. I have learned some things. I've discovered that our businesses are even more similar than I realized in philosophy. So I really appreciate it. And before we go, tell our audience how they can stay connected with you.
I'm on LinkedIn. Happy to connect with anyone there. I'm Matt, M-A-T-T, at HeinzMarketing.com. Welcome anyone connecting. If any of this content resonates, would love to hear from you and what you're working on in your life and career. And just really, really appreciate the opportunity to be here and to share some ideas.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I hope that everyone has enjoyed my discussion with Matt. Also, go back and listen to him on episode 14, where we talked about community. But we're already at the end. Until next time.
You've been listening to Revenue Rehab with your host, Brandi Starr. Your session is now over, but the learning has just begun. Join our mailing list and catch up on all our shows at RevenueRehab.live. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at Revenue Rehab. This concludes this week's session. We'll see you next week.